When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you tired of advertisements? You can listen to this episode and more ad-free for only $1 a month by supporting the show on Patreon. Visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and hit the Patreon tab for more details. Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Hello folks, and thanks for stopping by. I have quite the episode set up for you this evening. A monster of an episode, to be specific. For at long last, tonight we begin Season 17 with the long-awaited Government Workers Special. And I want to thank most of you for your patience while we took a little time off to update elements here in the studio. And more importantly, recharge our batteries a bit. And a huge thanks to all of the guests that helped us keep the content rolling over the break. Shannon LeGrow of Into the Fray, Bryce Johnson and Michael McMillan from Bigfoot Collectors Club, and of course, our fearless researcher and self-proclaimed MAU Meemaw, Delaney Bowers. Having those folks join me in the studio dramatically cuts down on the time needed to produce an episode, making it possible to keep the content rolling and allow me to take a few days off here and there. Something I think we all deserve. But that's all behind us now, because I'm back with a brand new installment. And trust me when I tell you that this one is a beast. You see, a few months back, I asked listeners to share stories about their government jobs. And well, I suppose I should have been a little more specific, because we received more submissions than I know what to do with. Quite literally. So tonight, we're going to take things slowly, one story at a time. There's no common thread here. The only quote-unquote theme tonight is that all of these calls were submitted by a current or one-time government employee. That, in each tale, is said to be 100% true. And I know them for a fact to be downright terrifying. Now, given the amount of calls, my commentary this evening will be a bit limited. But trust me when I say, that's not going to stop this episode from being spooky as hell. So without further ado, please welcome tonight's first guest. The following was submitted anonymously from parts unknown, like many of the other calls submitted this evening. Which makes a lot of sense given the government connection. So please, give a warm welcome to tonight's first submitter.
Hey, Derek, I'm going to go ahead and start this off with saying government. Listening to your previous episodes, you want that as a header, as a government employee. I'm a land management law enforcement officer. I'm not going to say which agency. It's one of the federal agencies, be it Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Forest Service. You know, they all have their various law enforcement divisions. So I'm a law enforcement officer in that aspect. And this took place in, let's say, somewhere in California. So I was fairly new, was getting ready to go to the academy, riding around with a veteran officer. And, you know, this officer showing me around this certain public land. Again, I have to be kind of careful with what I'm still currently active. And I'm riding around with him. He's showing me the ropes, showing me the areas, things like that. You know, what a wilderness area is, what we're looking for, this, that, and the other. And as we get to this area, I notice off to my right, about 3 to 5 football fields away, is what appears to be a man. You know, how did a guy get all the way out there? Because, you know, one of the things, you know, we're responsible for is people's safety. And now, this is an area where no human being can get to unless you're, I mean, I guess it'll take you days if you go on horseback, but there's no trails, there's no roads or anything like that. I mean, it's way out there. And there's a big cliff, basically a cliff. What dawned on me is how big this person was. You know, I'm aware of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, this and that and the other. And it catches my attention. It startled me. Like, holy, you know. But the first thing that caught my attention, this is a safety issue. Tell the officer, hey, the veteran officer, hey, look, man, what's that guy doing over there? Hey, look, he looks exactly to what I'm pointing to. He sees it. He turns pale. His hands started shaking, and his lips turned, like, pale. Like, I can't explain it. A lot more paler than his face did. He didn't acknowledge. He didn't say anything. He immediately turned the vehicle around and started driving out of there. And I'm like saying, hey, dude, that, and it dawned on me that he had to have seen this before. It was my first time seeing what I think was a giant. I mean, I don't know what, I don't know what else it could have been. It looked like a normal person somewhat, no clothes, just huge. And this is somewhere in California. I can't get any more specific than that. But, you know, fast forward, I've been with the agency for about 5 years, and let's just say that's the tip of the iceberg of what I've seen doing this job. A lot of us have stories. A lot of us won't ever say anything. But, yeah, well, what I believe I saw was some form of just really giant humanoid type of being standing on a cliff. And this veteran officer who had been doing it for at least 20 years, he was terrified. That's the story. But get to the point. Got a lot more since I've been doing this job. So if you're interested, let me know.
Thank you, caller. Giants. What a better way to kick off season 17. Real life giants. But first, let's back up here a bit. The folklore of giants has been around for a long, long time. Plenty of literary references throughout history. Aesop's fables, the Bible, Grimm's fairy tales, etc. While these humongous humanoids have been in the heads of humans for literally millennia. And those literary references continued on to contemporary sources by way of newspaper articles of the early 20th century. Articles like this one, from the Press Tribune out of Roseville, California, Friday, October 31st, 1930. Skeleton found showing giants roamed Sierras by J.F. McLaughlin, United States Staff Correspondent, Sacramento, October 28th. The recent discovery of a skeleton near MacArthur, Shasta County, believed to be that of a prehistoric giant who stumbled and was caught by a lava flow from Mount Lassen, was again given rise to the question, was California inhabited by human beings millions of years ago? The answer of scientists to this question, as far as preliminary investigations go, is yes. And there is no shortage of articles exactly like this one, from all over the United States. Wisconsin, Indiana, Texas, Ohio, California. The list continues. And I actually stumbled upon a collection of these articles, and I've linked to it in the show notes. They all seem to describe the exact same thing.
But to date, we probably have about 1,400 or 1,500 accounts and going from Catalina Island, California to Martha's Vineyard. Double rows of teeth, 7 foot and taller, skeletons reported. New York Times, Washington Post, LA Times, and it's not just newspaper accounts. George Washington reported giant bones in Virginia. Even Abraham Lincoln talked about the discovery of giant bones.
At a certain point, I reluctantly started to believe.
And although it's not mentioned in the clip, many of these skeletons, if not most, are found with red or blonde hair. And that clip was taken from a History Channel show on the subject called Search for the Lost Giants. A link can be found in the show notes. Now, the common thread between many of these historical references is that the Smithsonian Museum, or less specifically, the government itself, would accept and or confiscate these enlarged skeletons, only for them to later disappear from the record altogether. A real conspiracy, if you will. Now, although the Mystery Giant newspaper articles of old have long dried up, that doesn't mean that this phenomena isn't still reported from time to time. In fact, our caller's story reminds me of a paranormal saga that unfolded on TikTok, involving a giant of some sort. A fascinating story that ended not only in mystery, but in tragedy as well.
In April 2022, Canadian TikToker Andrew Dawson posted a video of a strange tall shape on top of a mountain in Vancouver. The details are shaky, but Dawson insists to the skeptical driver that it's a giant man.
It's a person standing there.
No, it's not!
Dude, have you seen what I see right now?
The video gained millions of views and set Dawson on a giant hunt that would last weeks. He went back to the mountain multiple times, but the giant was never seen again. Things got weird when Dawson was pulled over by who he claims was the CIA.
I just got stopped by like some CIA agents. He told me to turn around and said I'm trespassing. I said it's a public area.
He posted several videos showing the alleged CIA blocking access to the mountain. In one video, helicopters are seen flying around the mountain as if searching for something. Before long, the agents allegedly started to stalk Dawson. He posted a video of a black car parked outside his home. When he goes out to confront the driver speeds away. In early May, Dawson posted a strange video in which he confesses that the giant sighting was fake.
Sorry to disappoint you guys, but all the videos that I posted were scripted. They were just fake. They were just strictly for entertainment.
Throughout the video, his eyes dart off camera as if being instructed by someone. 10 days later, he backpedaled on the claim in a distressing video, saying,
"You might not see me post ever again. My videos weren't fake.
Dawson posted his final video on May 17th, showing footage of the same mountain, now with a huge new building on top of it. No one has seen him online since. Rumors have circulated online that Dawson passed away in July, with numerous videos showing what they claim to be evidence, including an obituary.
Now that clip courtesy of Know Your Meme over on YouTube. And this is only the tip of the iceberg with this story, so I highly recommend you go to the show notes or straight to YouTube and check out Know Your Meme's coverage. And if it's a deeper dive you'd like, AJ and Hecklefish did a great breakdown of the story over in the Y-Files about a year or so back. Again, that link too is in the show notes. Now, who's to say if the Andrew Dawson story is real? I've seen plenty of evidence that just might debunk it. But then again, it does seem like Andrew has passed away. So at the very least, the story is worth a closer look. And of course, the parallels to our caller's entry are downright uncanny. So a big thanks to him for calling into the program.
Well, what's the legal that came in?
Let's talk about microdosing. You've probably heard me singing the praises of microdosing before, and that's because there are so many benefits to microdose gummies. They help people manage pain, anxiety, and insomnia, to name a few. Microdose gummies deliver the perfect entry-level dose of THC that helps you feel just the right amount of good. They really do taste and feel amazing. I normally use them to help me wind down at the end of a long day, but I've also used them to help with back pain and to help me sleep at night. I'm someone whose mind is constantly buzzing, and microdose gummies just helps me feel relaxed without all the mental background noise. It keeps me up at night. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about getting high. I'm talking about the sweet spot between CBD and THC that gives you the benefits of both. So what are you waiting for? Microdose is offering an awesome deal for Monsters Among Us listeners. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com with promo code MONSTERSAMONGUS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com, promo code MONSTERSAMONGUS for 30% off and free shipping. microdose.com, promo code MONSTERSAMONGUS. Now, as always, supporting our sponsors supports the show, so thank you for listening. Now back to the Season 17 premiere. Now, moving on. We next hear from Cheryl, out of the state of Kansas.
Hey, Derek. This is Cheryl from Kansas. I'm calling as one of the government workers. I am calling about when I worked at the Leavenworth VA in Leavenworth, Kansas, worked in the hospital. It wasn't the original hospital, as the original hospital was established around 1861, but this was still a pretty old place, probably early 1900s. I worked on the fourth floor up in an office, and in my office there were four cubicles, and my cubicle and another cubicle matched up back to back. And the first experience I had was one day I was at my cubicle, and I heard pages starting to turn in a book just over and over and over, like someone was doing paperwork. And I thought perhaps it was my coworker, but when I ran over there, there was no one there. I looked to see what might have been turning, really couldn't identify the source. There wasn't any wind or anything, so it just felt like it was paranormal from the very first. The second experience I had was I would go to work at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was pretty much in the hospital by myself. I would go up to my office, and one morning I went up there, and there was a full-on conversation going on. I couldn't, you know, hear any details, but there was at least 2 to 3 people having a conversation. It was very muffled. I just listened for probably 30 seconds to a minute, just to see if, you know, I could identify maybe something else that it was, but it just kept going on. And then when I went to open the door, it stopped immediately. The next time I was in the office with a coworker, again, it was very early in the morning, and we were just in our office talking, and we always kept the door locked at that time in the morning. And someone started jiggling the door handle from the outside, like they were trying to get into the office. So my coworker and I, we just both stopped and listened because we couldn't imagine that there would be anyone up there that wouldn't just knock on the door or something like that, or wouldn't have a key. So I just ran to the door real fast to see who was out there, and there was no one there. I went to the stairwell. I ran. There was a long hall, and there was no one out there that would have been doing that. For the 7 years I was there, we would just hear, you know, noises every now and then that were not normal, very out of place. And I eventually just said, oh, it's Joe. And I don't know why I named him Joe or her Joe, but just felt like they had come to work and they were still doing their job and still working at the VA. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Cheryl. Now, this is the sort of story that I fully expected to hear on the government worker special. After all, as Cheryl mentioned, many of the VA hospitals across the country are now aging, decaying buildings, or at least they were 20 or 30 years ago. Combine that with the fact that it was an active hospital. That's the perfect combination for some sort of ghostly activity. But if you think that these old government buildings can't harbor some unseen force, well, here's another example that just might change your mind. Tom from Texas. Welcome to tonight's special episode.
Hey, Derek, this is Tom in South Texas. This is for your government workers story. I'm a retired federal park ranger, National Park Service, and I worked at a park in South Texas that had a historic building. It had been the home of a previous superintendent. The building was constructed in the late 40s, early 50s, so it wasn't ancient. It had kind of a Frank Lloyd Wrightish look to it. And that building was being converted to office space for a number of the departments that worked in that park. My department at the time was education, and I was the first one to move into the building. It would eventually house like four separate offices, but mine, the first one in, I got the best pick. And I was way in the back of the building where it was almost like an atrium. It was beautiful, glassed in. You could see the park. If you're going to work in a park, you want the view. I had a part-time employee who was actually a high school student who went to school half a day and worked half a day that did clerical work. She'd come in the afternoon. You know, she'd typically be in the office all day while I'd be running around taking care of things. So the first couple of days we were in that office, she would say she kept hearing noises. But, you know, I dismissed it. She was young. It was an old building. But one day, we're in the back of the office talking, arranging our new facility, and we very clearly heard the sound of a rolling chair, one of the new office chairs that they had given us, rolling on the all-wood floors. You can, in your mind, I'm not going to do my impersonation of it, but in your mind, you can hear the sound of a rolling chair moving maybe a foot on this wooden floor. So we both stopped and looked at each other. It was an afternoon, bright, sunny day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And we walked down the hall to the office, and sure enough, the chair for the new desk, for the new person coming in, was away from the desk just a little bit. Well, I don't know, is this old building slanted? Is it, you know, who knows? So I pushed the chair back under. We went back, and she's laughing at with me, saying, "See, I told you this building is haunted. It makes all kind of funny noises." Next day, right around the same time, we hear the same thing. And we go and look, and once again, the chair's rolled out a little bit from the desk. Now, just a strange coincidence. Who knows? There's no one else in this building. This building isn't close to anything else, so it's not like someone could come in and mess with us and then run out. We clearly see anybody doing that. So we put the chair back under. And, you know, we joked about, you know, we need to put a camera in here or something, you know. And it was a nervous laughter at this point in time. But we went back to work, and I said, just kind of out loud, the first park superintendent who lived there, I said, "If you're checking in on us, I promise, we're really working." And at this point in time, we hear the chair noise, but it's a much longer series of noises rolling down the wooden floor. We both get up and we tear down the hallway just in time to realize that the chair's not in that room anymore. It's actually rolled about 7 feet down the hallway toward us. It's not still moving when we see it, but if it were the building slanted, it would have to turn a corner and come down the hall to be where we found the chair that time. So we both said, "Okay, you know, we're gonna leave now." We put the chair back. I said, "You know, sorry if we upset you, you know, anything of the sort," to the universe or whomever was there moving the chair. And it never happened again. So we always joked that superintendent was checking on us to make sure us hardworking federal employees were doing what we needed to do. Never had anything else in that building, but that was a kind of a fun and different little experience. Hope you can use it. Have a great day. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Tom. You know, there's nothing worse than a loud office mate. Unless, of course, that office mate happens to be invisible. Then it becomes both annoying and creepy. Though, Tom, the good news here is that, as far as hauntings go, this manifestation is about as benign as it could be. As you're about to hear later in the episode, things could be a lot worse. And speaking of haunted government buildings, let's go ahead and make this a ghostly trifecta by welcoming yet another anonymous caller to the program.
Hi, this is a government worker story. Well, to start at the beginning, this occurred in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. I guess it was 2019, thereabouts. And it would have been, I believe the month was around June. I know it was just coming on to the summer. Simply put, at the office that I was working at had a long hallway, and to the left and to the right was cubicles. And at the very last cubicle, there was a coat rack. It had maybe about four or five different coats on it. And past that was a doorway. That doorway, very important for me to note, when you open it up, it was an interior door, so it didn't lead to the outside. It led into another hallway. One day I was just walking. I think I was about to leave the building and go on my lunch break. And I'm walking down that hallway, and about 50 feet in front of me, I had noticed one of the jackets, the arm, actually just lifted up. Like, I could only see partial of the coat rack because of the end of the cubicle, but one of the arms in the coat lifted straight up in the air, exactly like straight up, as if you were to extend your arm out as, you know, as far as you could. There was no hand in it. And it stayed like that for about maybe 2.5-3 seconds. And this is all happening while I'm walking towards it. And then it just dropped down, just like as if you cut a string and it fell. A little bit strange, but I just assumed that it was somebody putting on their jacket. About another 3 seconds, as I'm still continuing down the hallway, getting closer, the door opens up, the one I mentioned earlier at the end of the hallway, and a gentleman walks through. And he passes the coat rack and says nothing. And I kind of just thought to myself, that was a little bit rude that he didn't acknowledge that person that was there, not even a tilt of the head or hello or anything. He just, you know, stared straight ahead and walked. So that kind of really struck me as that's strange, because I just kind of assumed it was somebody putting on a coat, that they had stretched their arm out. And then as I walked up and we came upon the coat rack, and I looked to my right expecting to see somebody, because I got along with everybody in the office and I'm cordial with them. To my surprise, absolutely nobody was there. It was kind of chilling, and I turned and I said, okay, this isn't something I can ignore. Absolutely nobody there. The first thing I thought of, maybe it's a ventilation system kicked on. I looked around the ceiling, absolutely no vents, nothing of the sort. The door, there would be no breeze, because the hallway that it led to that's in front, like I thought maybe a breeze would come under the door, that was very slim to impossible because of where it was located in the building. There was no breezes there either. I considered that it might have been a prank, but it wasn't. The ladies that worked down in that section weren't the type of, ha-ha funny type. They were more serious and more so than myself. The other thing about it was, at that time, I actually was a government investigator. So, you know, I really had the foundation as far as conducting an investigation and asking the questions and looking around. And it just came to there was no answer. I actually went out immediately to the security guard's desk, and I had asked if, you know, there was any cameras in or around that area at all that I was unaware of. He said no. And then I just bluntly told him the story. I said, this is what I just observed. And once again, to my surprise, he was a fairly credible man. He turned with eyes wide open and said, did you see anything? And other than the coat, you know, did you see an entity or person? And I said, no, just the coat raising. He said, well, he said, the cleaning lady who's here at nighttime was downstairs in the building. And when she went into a room, something kick-slammed a heavy door and locked her inside, and she felt like there was resistance on the handle. When she woke it up, she heard some type of sound, like a, you know, something ghostly, I suppose, and supposedly had seen a full entity standing at the end of the hallway. She wouldn't discuss it further, but she does not clean at the building anymore, according to the security guard, all because of that. And just wanted to pass that along, and thank you very much for your show. I appreciate it. Take care. Bye.
As a huge fan of The American Office, I can't help but picture Pam Beasley moving that coat rack with her umbrella. If you know, you know. Otherwise, it seems like this call, too, continues the theme. Strange things happen in old, busy places. We thank you, caller, for sharing your experience as well. Now, these government calls aren't all ghostly. Check out this unusual entry from Mark from up in Oregon.
Derek, love your show. This is Mark from Oregon. Around 2000, I was working overseas in Naples, Italy for the U.S. government, the Navy actually. And their main base was in town or the city of Naples by the airport. But outside of the Naples, there was another smaller NATO base called SATCOM. And they did satellite listening there or something. It's one of those places you went to where if you had to do maintenance inside the building, they would hold you for a while where they covered everything up with blankets and tarps before you went inside to change a filter or something like that in the facility. While driving home one night, I'd pass that SATCOM site outside of Naples, and I noticed one evening a silver sphere like hovering above the base, and I just got a glimpse of it driving in my car, but you know, as an avid bird watcher, I'm pretty good at spotting things in the sky, and it was definitely a round silver sphere, maybe 3 to 4 feet in diameter, hovering above some of the communication antennas and satellite arrays there. I just never knew what it was. I had different theories. One, maybe it was something downloading information for the satellite listening station, or could have been some sort of bi-satellite listening, but I could never make sense of what I saw that day driving home. This is probably about 5:30 at night. The sun was out, just taking a drive home, and saw this silver sphere hovering above this, I'm guessing, top secret space. You couldn't go in there without them cleaning and covering everything up before you went inside that place. Love your show, Derek. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mark. Another silver sphere UFO. Now, this one is very reminiscent of the silver sphere UFO recorded over a base in Iraq a year ago. I've actually linked to that story in tonight's show notes if you'd like to take a look. But of course, there's also the fallen silver spheres that we've discussed on past episodes. I'm thinking of the Betz sphere, specifically. Well, regardless, it's fascinating stuff. And from what Mark is telling us, it might be a phenomenon that's been occurring for much longer than we originally thought. So thank you again, Mark, for making the phone call. Now, folks, if you have a story to share, a true story, call our hotline at 1-888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or if you're out of the country or from an area with bad service, record your story as a voice memo on your phone and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Now, from giants, ghosts, and gray spheres in the sky to a court case that centers around the supernatural. Please welcome yet another anonymous caller.
Hi, Derek. I am calling for your government worker special. I am going to remain anonymous for this. And I was one of a handful of people involved in a mental health hearing. I worked at a courthouse for quite a few years. And this particular case, normally when I would go into court, I would never really read the petitions. I'd just go in and just wing it. And mental health hearings were always very, very interesting. You never knew what you were going to get. They're always very sad. But this one, I remember when we went in, the woman that was on the stand that they were trying to commit looked normal, acted normal, sounded normal. She definitely did not look like or act like she had any sort of mental illness. The petition had stated that she was suffering from like psychosis, hallucinations, and trigger warning for anybody. This does mention quite a bit of suicide. But the petition stated that she had suicidal tendencies, and the state started, you know, asking her questions, and she went on to this story that her and her husband had lived in this house for over 20 some years, if I remember right, and everything was fine and wonderful. And then they had some neighbors that moved down just a couple houses down from them. It was a couple, and she didn't really state exactly what they were doing. She said they were really weird and they were practicing really weird things, to the point where I guess they had a dead dog displayed in their yard at some point. And she said ever since they had lived there, all of a sudden everybody in the neighborhood started experiencing really weird things, such as like hauntings and just creepy things. But from the sounds of it, they got the worst of it. She said that it started out where her closet in particular stated that it smelled like death, were her exact words. And she said that she couldn't figure it out. It smelled like something had died in there, and it just came up out of nowhere. Well, then they just started having more weird things happening in the house, like things being moved, and their two little dogs were freaking out over anything. They'd stare at the corner and start barking and barking and losing their minds. And she said that they ended up hooking up a camera, and I wish more than anything that they would have had exhibits for this. She didn't have any of these documentations, and I wish more than anything that she would have had exhibits and witnesses for this, because I would have loved to see it. But she said that they hooked up this camera that faced down their hallway, and you see this black smoke that rolls out from their bedroom where her closet is, the one that smelled like death. She said that it creeps slowly, like on the ground almost, and then comes straight up to the camera, and then the camera shuts off. And then she said that that's when she realized that they had a problem. She started becoming very, very scared. And she said that at one point her dogs were freaking out. She took a picture of them and she looked at the picture, and here one of the heads, I want to say they were Chihuahuas or very, very small dogs. One of the heads of the dogs looked like a demon. She said it was almost distorted to where there was a face over the dog's face in the picture. She said it was the most terrifying thing she'd ever seen. So then that point, she insisted that they needed to call a priest. So they called a priest to come out to their house, to bless it, to almost do like an exorcism of it. Not quite, but to rid all the evil spirits out of it. And the priest came and he temporarily got rid of whatever it was. She said it only worked for a very short time. And then immediately after, the smell came back and then more things started happening and they were coming back worse. So she just became very, very scared. She became also very, very religious. And so she would have crosses and she'd hang the crosses up on the walls. And she said at one point she saw one fly straight out of the wall and she hung it back up. And then they would come back if they left for a while and the cross would be hung back up upside down. And she also had rosaries that she would use. And she said her rosaries would become missing often. And when she would find them, they'd be in a totally different place that she had put them, and they'd be broken into multiple pieces. And she would have to go back and she'd get more and it'd do again. And I remember there was something about batteries being taken out of their remotes. They'd find things, just weird things like that consistently. And they became so frightened and scared, and it was affecting their marriage and their mental sanity. And so they started staying in hotel rooms for just days at a time, but they would still have to go back to their house to get clothes and any items that they needed. And she said they could never really get away from whatever was there. Finally, it broke them both. And the husband, who was also there at the time, he was a witness on the stand and everything. He took off one day. They called their kids, who were about 7 hours away in a different city, and said that they were ending it all, they couldn't handle it anymore. And he went and tried to hang himself in the garage. And she went out and took their vehicle with their handgun and was planning on shooting herself. She then, and I think it was snowing or icy out or something like that, and she ended up rolling their vehicle and was pretty hurt from that. But then that's what stemmed everything from the hearing that we were in. Their kids were obviously terrified, called the cops, and the cops came, and they were committed for the short time. He was released, I think, the same day, but for some reason they kept her longer. And it was just such a crazy experience to witness this firsthand in a job where, you know, I would see criminals and all different kinds of people, but I would never expect to see someone who was truly affected from something paranormal. And I truly believe them because the sheer emotion that they had was so sad to see, because the judge, obviously, he didn't believe them and he thought it was a big joke. And he figured that they were on meth or drugs or some sort. And so he committed her for a short time. And I remember after the judge made the ruling, the husband stood up in the gallery and just started screaming at the top of his lungs, "We're not crazy. We're not crazy. Please, someone believe me. Believe us." And he was just sobbing and sobbing. And it was just such a wild experience. My heart just broke for them. And I sure hope that they got the help that they needed and that they were able to get out of that house and that no one else is experiencing it. But anyways, I hope that you can use this. And thank you so much for the wonderful podcast for all of us weirdos to join together. Thank you.
Thank you, caller. Now, I'm not joking when I say this could easily be a miniseries on Netflix. And I feel for these people. Could you imagine telling the truth on the stand, no less, and no one believes you? Not that it's hard to distrust some of the claims made in the story. They are indeed wild. But still, I feel for this couple. And I also hope they got the help that they needed, whatever form that may be. And I too also wish I could have seen these videos. It's not often that the paranormal is brought up in the courtroom, but it does happen from time to time. Take, for instance, Stambovsky versus Ackley. Helen Ackley claimed to have experienced years of poltergeist activity in her New York home. She talked about her experiences in several press articles, and her home soon began to get a reputation for being haunted. When she sold the house to Jeffrey Stambovsky, she is said to have informed him about the hauntings, to which he replied, "We'll have to call in the Ghostbusters." Then the contract was signed. Soon, however, Stambovsky got cold feet. He claimed to have just only found out about the hauntings and wanted to pull out of the sale. He then took Ackley and her real estate agent to court, claiming fraudulent misrepresentation of the property. A first trial was dismissed, but Stambovsky appealed. The court then ruled that, as a matter of law, the house is haunted. This was not because they found that ghosts are real, but rather because having the reputation of being haunted would affect the value of the property. It also found that buyers had a duty to check a property before they buy it, but that as ghosts cannot be seen, they allowed the contract to be broken. Now, that info and 9 other examples of the supernatural in court can be found in the show notes under a list of 10 weird court cases featuring supernatural beings from the site The List First. And like I said, sometimes it does happen. So thank you, caller, for adding another example to that slowly growing list.
Woman, then you're disciplined. Who is...
Dan, you'll get 40% off.
Now, like I'd mentioned in the intro, I might have cast too big of a net using the vague term government worker. Now, I expected calls from 3-letter agencies, but I didn't account for police officers, detention center guards, and even janitors. But don't worry, we're going to get through them all. Beginning with the following anonymously submitted entry.
Hi, Derek. This story is for your government employees episode. I prefer to remain anonymous as I still work as a tax auditor for a state taxing authority, and I want to continue doing that. Occasionally, we have to travel out of our state to review taxpayer records at the taxpayer's headquarters. The coworker I was traveling with was researching travel accommodations for this particular out-of-state audit trip, and they called me over to say that there's only one hotel allowing the government hotel room rate in the taxpayer's vicinity, the Old Colonial Inn in Concord, Massachusetts. But there's a problem with this hotel. It's super haunted. I looked at my coworker and I said, "What difference does the hotel being haunted make? Like, ghosts want anything to do with a couple of government employees? Just book the room." Fast forward to our trip, which was in June of 2011. I had to be up at 3 a.m. that day to make our flight so we could get to the taxpayer's office. We got there, and by the time we were finished for the day and got to the hotel, it was 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. So it was a long and exhausting day. I walk into my room, I turn on the TV, and I go to the bathroom to do what you do in the bathroom. The room was small, and I could see the entire room from the bathroom. I look over at the TV, and it's nothing but static and snow. You can barely make out a picture. And I do not know why, but in my head, I instantly thought, effing ghosts are messing with my TV. And I am so unreasonably angry that these ghosts have the audacity to be messing with my TV. I finish up in the bathroom. I stomp over to the TV. I move the TV to the left, then to the right. I give it a little percussive maintenance. The TV is still nothing but static and snow. Now I am absolutely livid at these ghosts because for some reason, I am certain this problem with this TV is being caused by ghosts. So I yell out the room, "Hey, you ghosts, listen up. It has been a long day. I am tired. I want to watch TV and go to bed. So you fix this TV and you fix it right now." As soon as the last of my words left my lips, bing, the TV reception is now crystal clear and perfect. Now, I will admit, I was taken aback by this development. As I stood there blinking in surprise, I thought, you know, might be a coincidence, or there might really be ghosts in this hotel room. And if it is ghosts, you need to be polite to these ghosts. So I say out loud, "Thank you, ghosts. That will do nicely." I looked around the room. Yep, I'm as alone as I have been the whole time. I shrugged and proceeded to watch TV and go to bed. The next day, I tell all of this to my coworker, and they say, "Are you going to ask the hotel to move you to another room?" I said, "Absolutely not. The ghosts in my room fixed stuff. In fact, I didn't have any problems with anything at that hotel for the rest of my stay." As I do think there were some ghosts there, apparently not even the undead want to be on the bad side of a tax auditor. Derek, thank you for letting me tell my story. I have been enjoying the bonus content on Patreon. I appreciate you and the show. And I hope you also have a great night. Bye now.
If only all ghosts were this helpful. Thank you, caller, for calling in. You know, I was curious enough about this useful spirit that I did a little bit of research on the old Colonial Inn there in Concord, Mass. And what I found actually makes a little bit of sense. Remember that our caller mentioned that the entity, or whatever it was helpful and fixed the television when she, asked it to do so. Well, what I learned in that research honestly shocked me a bit. The following story was told by the inn's general manager, Andy Seidel, courtesy of Wicked Local Central.
Can you just tell me a little bit about the haunted history of the Concord's Colonial Inn?
Absolutely. So, back in the Revolutionary War era, throughout the 1770s, this inn was actually a home, and actually the part that we're in now is actually a home owned by a doctor. And that doctor, Dr. Timothy Minot, he actually helped to treat wounded soldiers after the Battle of Lexington and Concord. Now, as many out there will know, doctors did not have separate offices and homes at this time. And whatever happened spilled right into where they were. And where they were was right here. And upstairs, there's actually a room as well as one on this level, room 24 upstairs and room 27. Room 24 was where they actually took the wounded soldiers to operate. And I mean, this was not 1770s operations. This was not something that you'd see today at Mass General or anywhere else down the street. So there's some stories there about these wounded soldiers who were treated. But the most common story is actually that the doctor, Timothy Minot, and actually some of the others who volunteered here actually still walk the halls as ghosts to try to tend to their patients. It's not so much that the patients themselves are here, but it's actually that the caretakers still view this as their responsibility. And those are the stories that we hear over and over and over.
So in other words, the ghosts are known for being helpful and lending aid to their quote-unquote patients. It's a weird little tie in there, but it certainly checks out, given that the ghost in our caller's room seemed to have repaired her television. So thank you again, caller, for helping us make that connection. Folks, don't forget to visit our merchandise shop at monstersamonguspodcast.com. Click the shop tab and get access to hats, t-shirts, bags, totes, posters, stickers, pins, patches, probably a lot more. And don't forget, we're phasing a couple of designs out. So if there's something you've been eyeballing, now might be the time to get it. Now, I'm not joking when I say there are a lot of calls still to get through. We're not even a third of the way there, I don't believe. So with brevity in mind, I'm going to shut up and rattle off a few calls, beginning with a friend of the show and Instagram stable, Mr. Obscure from Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Derek, this is Mr. Obscure from Instagram, and I was just calling in for your government worker special because I spent some time as a school custodian, and we had a very interesting occurrence at one of the middle schools I worked at, and this is outside of the Pittsburgh area. I'm really hesitant to list the actual name of the school because school boards are weird when you start talking about things like this and people's jobs could be at stake, but I digress. There was a middle school, and it was built early 60s at the height of the Cold War phenomenon. As a result, you had a series of underground tunnels, and these connected the middle school to the adjacent elementary and high schools down below in a very small area. So over time, for whatever reason, they kind of collapsed those tunnels intentionally, but they're still in the middle school underneath, like almost like a little mini labyrinth. They have plumbing and electrical conduits, glycol lines, things like that. So fast forward to 2020, to the COVID pandemic, all the kids are home. We were home for a while, but then some of the people working there before I, who most of this happened to, I have my own experience. I'll get to that later here. And they were doing some cleaning just to stay busy and basically justify their jobs. They found an oil painting of the person who the school is named after. And, you know, he was an older guy, judging by the picture. It's, you know, maybe 60s, early 70s or so. And after they found that, they brought it up. And for whatever reason, this oil painting ended up in the gym teacher's office, of all places. I just don't think that anywhere else to put it. Moved later, but I digress. So as soon as that happened, there have been a slew of sightings, specifically by the night crew that work from around 10:30 to 7 in the morning, something like that. And there's only two of them. And when I first started here, they were already telling me, you know, be careful, because I was on evening shift. They said, you might see something. It's probably not going to hurt you or anything, but they would see a guy matching the exact description of the person shown in the painting, walking down the halls near the gym where the painting was located, like it triggered something. And there's a few instances where the one would think they saw the other one, follow them into a classroom, and then no one would be there. Then they give them a call on the phone and find out they're in an entirely different part of the building. And so first, you know, I just took it with a grain of salt because there's only just two people on night shift. There's a guy on daylight. He doesn't believe this at all, but he's never there at night. And then, well, over the course of time, we had two other people come in for the night shift, and they both have reported pretty much the same exact thing. The one guy, and I remember in particular, he just said, hey, who's the bald guy that walks around at night? And he had no idea of the story or anything. And then somebody else showed him the picture, and they said his face went white as a ghost, no pun intended, because that was the exact person he saw wandering the hallway. And fast forward to whenever I was starting working at this specific school, it was towards the end of the night, and it's just a very minor occurrence. It was me and one other person, and it's two buildings. One is the middle school, the other is the administrative offices. And they're only joined by one hallway because the administrative offices, they weren't added on them until I think the early 2000s, some 40 years after the school was built. So you only have one door that connects both buildings, and it's a maze to get to that one door. So I'm in the classroom, it's the other night, and, you know, I'm just kind of chilling, hanging out. And then the doorknob I hear in the classroom, and just, it like sounds like someone's trying to turn it twice. And I pause, and I'm a little bit freaked out. I'm thinking it's the guy I'm working with who's trying to mess with me, but I come back out in the hallway. There's no one there. And being a, I was the only person in the school at night, you would clearly be able to hear the echo is just so profound in these buildings when someone's walking down a hall or a stairs especially. So immediately after, I started walking towards the central offices, which is actually a 10-15 minute hike from where I was at, as I'm calling my coworker just to see where they're at. And by the time I found him, he was in a location where it had been physically impossible for him to get where I was at, mess with me, and then get away silently enough to not be heard as well as before I would see him. So, I mean, no, I mean, that could have just been any other phenomenon for the lock itself, you know, but considering everything else that happened with the building, who knows? So, you know, after this happened, I talked to somebody that used to work in the same building prior to the COVID pandemic when that oil painting was found. And he worked there 5 years on night shift, and he said he'd never seen anything. He never heard anything from anyone else there about any type of hauntings, sightings, anything at all like that. And it just kind of strikes me to believe that finding that triggered something. And the one biggest question we all have is, how did that painting get down there in the first place? Like, I mean, this was in a nasty, dingy, wet tunnel underneath the building. And, you know, that's where we keep old furniture that's probably never going to be used again and other stuff that we really don't care about. And no one seems to have an answer. And, well, now it's changed. It's in the library, which is kind of where I'm stationed at for my jurisdiction here. So I'm going to keep you updated to see on if I have anything else to report here. But I love your show, man. Keep it great. I hope your winter is going a lot better than the last one. Keep doing everything you do. Later.
Thank you, Mr. Obscure. It's great to hear from you. Mr. Obscure and I have a friend in common. Or at least I think we do. And get this. This friend works for one of those three-letter agencies. What a coincidence, indeed. Well, thank you again, Mr. Obscure, for calling in. And I love seeing those weird and wacky car posts when Instagram actually shows them to me. And you know, that's a good reminder to share this bit of info. Now, if you do follow us over on Instagram, be sure to subscribe so you actually get to see our content. They have the algorithm so messed up over there. It's almost impossible today to reach your full audience. But subscribing to our Instagram account will certainly help. Also, if you're not following the show, do it. It's one of the best ways to keep up to date on all things Monsters Among Us. And sometimes, I even show up there. It's Monsters Among Us Podcast over on Instagram. Now, as promised, we're going to dive right back into another call. This one from Zach, in parts unknown.
Hey, Derek, this is Zach. This is another call for your government worker special. I used to work for the county doing IT for about 5 years, and most of our offices were in the old buildings up on our square. This one in particular was the main courthouse, and it had a large clock tower. Now, these buildings were built back in, I think, 1908 was the courthouse. So there wasn't a lot of consideration for IT infrastructure, so we kind of had to make do with what we had. And some of our equipment would end up in strange places, one of which was one of our switches was up in the clock tower by, like, the gears and mechanics of the clock. And more importantly to the story, the bells. So, you know, the bells would ring at every hour, and if you were up there when they rang, they were really loud. So much so that my boss told me, hey, if I was going up there to work on the switches, he said, there's some earmuffs hanging on the back of the door. You know, put them on when you go up there in case the bells ring while you're up there, or if you prefer, just try to avoid being up there when the bells ring. now that it's an old clock, it can get a little off. So he said, give it about 5 minutes either way before you go up there. It's okay. I look at the time. It's about just past 9, maybe 9:15. And I go, okay. So I set a timer on my watch for about 15 or 20 minutes. And so, okay, I can get up there, start the update on the switch, come back down, and I'll be out of there by the time the bell's ringing. So I go up there, start the update, start checking switch ports, and soon enough, I get a call from my boss. So it just calls and says, hey, I'm checking in. I didn't get your check-in. We usually do check-ins about every 20 minutes or so, just saying, hey, this is where I'm at, this is what I'm working on. Just so we keep an idea of what everybody's whereabouts and we're moving along on stuff. And I say, well, Al, I just got up here. I'm just at the top of the courthouse. And he says, Zach, you haven't texted me for an hour and a half. I said, what do you mean? I said, I just got up here. The bell's hadn't rung or nothing. There's no way. I set a timer. And sure enough, I look at my watch, and it's almost 11 o'clock. And I go, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened that time. I never heard the bells ring. And even like the 11 o'clock bells, I never heard ring. So I don't know if they were broken or what have you, but they had rung earlier that day. I mean, I heard them when I was working on another switch in the courthouse. So, I don't know. Very strange. A lot of strange things happening there. Take care, Derek. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Zach. Now, as eerie as that entry was, believe it or not, it's not the only, nor the spookiest, of missing time stories I'll be sharing in this special episode. But more on those calls a little bit later.
Down. That's about 10,000.
Yes, sir. This is...
We'll take.
Now, let's get back into the rapid-fire action with this creepy little entry from Kevin in the Buckeye State.
Hi, this is Kevin from Ohio. I'm calling for the government employee episode. So, back in 2021, I was working for a juvenile detention center, which is pretty much a kid jail here in Ohio. I worked in one of the southern counties. So I worked a night shift there, and one night I'm standing at control, and I see a figure walking across the top deck next to the cell doors. I was thinking it was one of the kids that got up or something. So I pull my coworker in. I ask him, I said, hey, is there a kid up? And he tells me, no, there's no kid up. It was just me and him, because that's how small of a facility we were. I said, oh, well, I think I just saw somebody walk across the top deck. Do you know anything about that? He said, no, I don't. But I do know that there was a girl who killed herself a few years ago. And ever since, people claim that they see somebody walking across the top deck. I found that very creepy. He found it a little creepy. I told my boss that. He said, yeah, they called her. I forget what they called her. They called her something. Called the ghost something. But yeah, love the show. Hope to hear us on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin. With all the emotion bottled up in places like that, it does not surprise me one bit that strange activity is reported there. Same for any jail, prison, or detention center. Just the nature of the place, with all the emotion and energy that's been exchanged in that facility, it's hard to imagine that a little bit hasn't remained. Thank you again, Kevin, for telling us all about it. Now, I know I said I was firing these off rapid fire, but I almost forgot to remind you to check out our feature film, Shadows in the Desert, High Strangeness in the Borrego Triangle. To tune in, just visit borregotriangle.com, B-O-R-R-E-G-O, or search for it on your streaming device. And if you do watch, please do us a favor and leave us a review wherever you can. It's an excellent way to spread the word, and we certainly appreciate the good ones. Now then, next up, we hear from a firefighter. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, Derek, I'd like to remain anonymous about this. You guys have requested people with government employee type backgrounds to call in. So I've been a firefighter for over 20 years now, and back in August of 2023, I was a shift commander for our guys that night, and we received a call at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning for just kind of a typical run. Wasn't much to it. We sent an engine company and a ladder company over there, and got there, wasn't nothing to it. We were turning around coming back to the station, just typical run for what we consider a BS call. And on our way back, there's a spot that we cross, and it's a downtown area. It's a very residential, just typical small town area. And as we were coming back, I noticed the engine company was ahead of me, and it used to be railroad tracks. They've converted to a recreational trail. It's asphalt, runs, you know, connects 3 or 4 different towns, 50 or 60 miles long. But here in our particular part of town, there's residential areas there, so there's fences that keep people from getting off of the trail and going into people's yards and things like that. It's generally pretty well lit, and it even has like a call box. If you have an emergency, you can push this button and it essentially calls 911 and you can speak with a dispatcher there. So I noticed the engine company guys ahead of me had kind of slowed down, like they were looking at something, and they just kept on going, so didn't really think much of it. So when I come in, I was probably 100 yards behind them or so. So when I come up to that area, I slowed down just in case there was an animal or, you know, even maybe somebody on that recreational trail on a bicycle or something, you know, just kind of trying to be cautious. It's early in the morning. They may not be expecting somebody to come through there. So I slow down, and when I slow down, something catches my eye, and it's maybe 100 feet away, and it just looks like somebody standing there on this trail in between where the lights would be at. It caught my attention enough to the point that I stopped the truck, and I'm in a pickup style truck. So I roll the window down, and sure enough, there's what appears to just be a black outline of somebody standing there. And really the only way I could describe it would be like the Hat Man style description that a lot of people give. So I'm looking at him, and I can't tell he's looking at me. It's just a dark outline of somebody just jet black there in between where the street lamps are on this trail. So I'm looking, and I'm trying to process what I'm looking at because it's, you know, 2:30 in the morning. It's hot outside, you know, and for the most part, shouldn't be anybody on that particular part of that trail there. So as I'm sitting there staring, it's kind of looking like it's almost like it's kind of hard to describe. Whatever I'm looking at there looks like it's kind of fading in and out, moving back and forth, like from one spot to another really fast. You know, my brain's trying to process what I'm seeing. And doing the job that I do for a long time, there's not a whole lot that I can look at. So, you know, that was kind of weird, but this was, you know, in the weird category. So I'm trying to figure out what I'm looking at here, you know, if it's just somebody standing there, if it's a weird shadow or what it is, you know, it's just being cast by those lights. So being the nosy person I am sometimes, I said, you know, I've got a flashlight here, so it's in a charger down towards the floor, so I kind of bend down to grab the flashlight. Whenever I come back up and shine the light, it's gone. There's really nowhere for that somebody to have ran off of that trail because there's fences in these people's backyards to keep people from doing that, and he didn't come past me, and it's a 300 or 400 yard stretch before there's a curve or something he can get around. So not sure exactly what happened to whatever it was I was looking at, but I took my eyes off of him maybe 2-3 seconds and looked back up, and it was gone. No glowing eyes or anything like that. Like I said, it's just a black outline of what looked like somebody standing there, maybe wearing a hat. And it freaked me out pretty good. You know, after he was gone, I said, it's time to go. So as I was continuing back to the station, I'm trying to figure out what it was I just seen. You know, I'm trying to rationalize, was that somebody? Was that, you know, just a weird trick of light or whatever? So I'm still kind of on the fence about what I actually seen, because I'm a firm believer that people see stuff, you know, and things like that. But it's still one of those, when you see something, you're kind of thinking maybe that's not what I seen. So I pull back to the station, I get out of the truck, walking back inside, and my officer from my engine company he walks up and he says, "Man, did you see that creepy guy standing out there on the trail?" I said, "What are you talking about?" Trying to act like I didn't see it. He's like, "Man, there was some guy standing out there." He said he was just wearing all black, and he was almost blurry whenever I looked at him. He said, "We slowed down, and I seen him stand out there. He's a pretty good ways away, but he was almost blurry. He was kind of in and out of focus there." I said, "Yeah, maybe I did see something." And he said, "Well, when I seen him, I told my driver, it's time to go. It's pretty weird." So they just went on, and here I come up behind them. So it did kind of give me a little bit of validation that somebody else did see it, even though they didn't get quite as good of a look at it as I did. So it did give me a little bit of validation that I wasn't crazy and there was something or somebody standing there that was kind of out of focus and looked like they were shifting back and forth really quick. So that's my story. I appreciate it, Derek. Have a good one, buddy.
Thank you for calling in. I love that more than one person saw whatever this thing is. That certainly lends a bit of credibility to our caller's claims. But was it someone dressed all in black? Perhaps someone with a blanket draped over them, trying to keep warm? Or, as it seems, our caller and some of these details are suggesting, some sort of dark entity. Whatever it was, it made for one hell of a story. So thank you again, caller, for taking the time to share it. Now, as I've already mentioned a few times, we have a ton of content for this season premiere episode. So much so that I'm breaking this bad boy up into two halves. Which means the following is tonight's final entry. Joining us out of the state of Washington, please welcome Mike to the program.
Hey, Derek. I've been meaning to call in for your government workers episode that you're trying to put together. This is not necessarily an encounter, but just a cool story, and I thought you might be able to use it for your special. It happened on a trail that we refer to around here as the Palouse Cascades Trail outside of Ellensburg, Washington. It would have been spring of 2022. I believe it was March, but the note that I made about the incident in my phone is dated to April of 2022. That might have just been when I wrote it down, though, but I can't remember the exact date. It's a common recreation area. Even during the winter, there had just been a snow. Probably one of our last snows of the year. So there were, you know, obvious signs of people walking their dogs out there, people just going for walks themselves at the beginning of the trail where I started. Once you get to a certain point, though, where I was walking, the use starts to peter off a little bit due to the cold weather and stuff, and prints were pretty minimal. There were some dog or coyote prints out that way. Some areas of compacted snow where people had obviously walked. And there was even, up to a point, another set of snowshoe prints, which I was looking at. I'm a big hiker, and I love looking at wildlife prints of all kinds. So I'm pretty used to seeing bobcat prints where I hike, definitely coyote prints. A couple years back, there were frequently large and small cougar prints. So I think there was a mother cougar with some kits. So, you know, I'm always kind of looking on the ground to see what kind of wildlife might be around just to keep my head on a swivel. So this portion of the trail that I was on crosses a road called McManamy Road and a highway that's US Route 97. What you should know about this area is that it's not super remote. And that's one of the interesting things about the story. It's rather a rural area for sure, a country area. But later, I would come to find out that right where I had the sighting, there's actually a fish hatchery out there that's partially run. I'm not sure the status of the fish hatchery itself, but it's partially controlled by the Yakima Nation tribe. So that kind of ties into the story later. So I'm snowshoeing out there. I'd just gotten my snowshoes that year, and I was just using this trail for practice. You know, it's not too far out. I can drive my car to the trailhead, throw on my snowshoes, and kind of get some good exercise. And I was crossing over an area, there's an overpass, so the whole trail used to be a train line, and there's an overpass area by a road called Clock Road. It's K-L-O-C-K-E. I don't know if it's clock or clocky, but if you guys wanted to look it up on Google Maps, you can find it. So I'm looking at footprints and stuff like that, and like I said, it's sparsely used at this point, and I'm kind of getting out further from where people are, but I noticed a set of prints, what I thought were human prints, going down the slope of the built-up kind of earthen area where, you know, these old train tracks would have sit and this trail currently runs. And there's these tracks going down the side. But the first thing I notice about them is that the stride of these tracks is incredibly long. And you can kind of tell where I'm going with this story. It was probably 6 to 7 feet from one step to the next step down the slope. And I did take photographs of this that I'll attach to the email as well. And you're welcome to post those in your show notes. So that was interesting to me. I thought maybe, you know, somebody who was hiking had kind of jumped down the ridge to retrieve something that they'd dropped or something along those lines. I continue snowshoeing up the trail. And about 15, 20 seconds further down the trail, I hear a knocking sound from a group of trees. This whole area is kind of a wetland, actually. And if you look at it on Google Maps, or, you know, Google Earth, whatever you prefer, it's kind of an oxbow sort of floodplain area of the Yakima River, and definitely heavy wetlands through there with cattails and willows and kind of thick trees that grow down through there. But I hear a knocking, a very distinct knocking, not a woodpecker. I hear woodpeckers all the time. And it was 3 distinct knocks, which is something I've heard in the past when I've been in the woods, but that kind of put my hair on edge, because from listening to your program and a couple others since I've had my experiences, I've learned that that's something that's associated with a particular bipedal creature that people think might or might not exist. So I'm keeping my head on a swivel. I'm looking around, but I'm continuing on my walk. At this point, honestly, I think somebody might be pulling a prank on me. But it's only about 20 or 30 seconds more down the trail that I start to find some more tracks. At first, they are kind of a melted, not so distinct track, but what they do show is that they're actual toes in these footprints, as though somebody were out there walking barefoot. And that was really odd to me, but they're kind of mangled. I'll send you pictures of those as well. A couple more steps down the track and I'm stopped dead, because there is one of the clearest footprints in the snow that I've ever seen. What I did is I laid down my hiking pole next to it for reference and size, but I carry a small compass in my bag that has inches for measurement on the side for doing navigation and stuff like that. So I laid that down next to the track when I took the photo so that when I got home, I could get some sort of a point of a reference for scale. And that print is approximately somewhere in the neighborhood of 14 to 15 inches long, but it's super, super thick in the heel. I believe that the heel itself was somewhere around 4 inches wide. I'll send you pictures of the print as well as pictures of the print with the compass and the kind of scale measurements that I made on there. Very interesting. So now at that point, I was kind of freaked out, to be perfectly honest. And I took some shots, panoramic shots of the area, just to see if there might be anything that I wasn't seeing at the time. And I let it go at that. I was on edge at that point because I'd heard that knocking. Now I'm seeing a print. If someone's messing with me, haha, it's funny and everything, but I've actually not taken the chance. I just turned around, snowshoed back to my vehicle, and went home and called it a day. So the interesting part of the story that relates to government workers is this past holiday season, I picked up a part-time gig with the Postal Service, and I was doing a rural route here in Ellensburg, Washington, and hopefully none of my coworkers listen to this episode because they'll know exactly who I am, but hi, guys. It was Route 13, and it was about 2:15 in the afternoon, according to my notes. I'd gone out to this Clocky Road or Clock Road area, K-L-O-C-K-E, and lo and behold, the house that I was making a delivery to was the house that is closest to where I'd had my experience on that trail. So I pull up, I'm doing my due diligence, I've got my badge, they can see that I'm a Postal Service employee. I knock on their door to make a delivery because I've got multiple packages and I don't want to leave them out in the snow. And in talking to the couple that was there, we were just chatting for a moment, and I believe that they were members of the Yakima Nation tribe as well. And I said, hey guys, I don't mean to sound weird or anything, but would you be interested in hearing this story about what happened to me when I was on the trail next to your house, just right over there? And I pointed. I mean, it was literally like within 50 yards of where we were standing. And the wife especially was nodding her head like, yeah, I'd be interested in hearing. So I tell them the story. I recount everything I just said. And I asked them, I was like, do you guys want to see the pictures? They definitely wanted to see the pictures, which I actually ended up texting to the husband. So I asked them after all of this, I say, do you guys have any weird experiences out here? Have you ever seen anything that would kind of corroborate what I've experienced? Well, before I even finish the question, the wife is nodding her head kind of vigorously. And she goes on to tell me this story, two stories actually. The first story is about their kids. I don't know how many kids they have, but she told me a story that at one point the girls were playing outside and they had come running inside and were very upset about something. And so when she calmed them down, she asked them what they'd seen, and she kind of chuckled. She said in their point of reference, what they said that what they'd seen was chupacabra. They'd seen a chupacabra, a monster. And she said, okay, well, a monster, what did this thing look like? She thought that maybe they were just being silly and playing games, but they seemed a little too startled. And the way that they described what they'd seen was that it was tall and that it was covered in hair. So when she told me that story, I got the hair on my back and my neck standing up, and she was dead serious and really kind of believed what her girls had told her after recounting that story. The second story that she told me was that she had been around that same time of her daughter's incident. She had been walking their dogs on the trail, the same trail that I was walking on near their house. And one point, I think she had two dogs is what she'd said. One of the dogs she referenced was a husky wolf or coyote mix. It was quite a wild dog, and she said pretty darn aggressive and very protective. Never backed down from anything. She's walking the dog down this trail, and at one point the dog stopped dead in its tracks and would not go any further. And in fact, she said as she tried to go forward and was continuing down the trail, it stopped her by grabbing her pant leg and pulling her back. So it had sensed something that was there that was a threat and didn't want the owner to go any further. But I just thought that those were both kind of strange corroborations to the original story that I'd had. And I think you'd be interested to see these photos they'll send you. I tend to be, you know, not skeptical anymore since I've had some experiences of my own, but I like to be open-minded about what the logical explanations might be. In this case, someone else's corroboration, unless they're involved in some sort of a hoax themselves. Pretty interesting to me. So thanks for your program. I appreciate everything that you do, and I hope to call in the future if I see any other weird stuff. Take care.
Thank you, Mike. Now, those photos are up in the show notes. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com to take a look. And it looks like a lot of these tracks have collapsed in on themselves as a result of the deep snow, making them extremely difficult to read. But there is one crisp track that Mike captured, but I almost wonder if it's too crisp. I suspect that it's a boot print with snow stuck to the front of the shoe, which would make the appearance of toe impressions, like what you see there in the photograph. But honestly, that's just a guess based on one single photograph. I would venture as far as to say that the data that Mike collected is certainly worth another glance. And jumping on over to Google Maps, I'm able to see the general area where this experience took place. And some of the first things that jump out to me are that this location is along the Yakima River. And it's often claimed that these creatures use rivers and streams as travel corridors. So having the experience take place next to a river makes perfect sense. Also, this location is less than 10 miles from Mount Rainier National Park, a large swath of protected land. A perfect place to hide a couple big feet. And anyone who's anyone knows that Washington State is a hotbed for this sort of activity. In fact, the United States government even listed it as part of the flora and fauna of that state on an official military document.
The year, 1974. The document, the Washington Environmental Atlas. One of the many creatures in the state's official list of native species, Sasquatch.
That book costs the taxpayers of the state of Washington $200,000 to put out. It includes a map of all known Sasquatch sightings in the region. I'd call that official confirmation.
Now that clip courtesy of Unsealed Conspiracy Files, and does an excellent job of describing this strange historical detail. The government has its hand in everything. Should we really be surprised? It's not messing with Bigfoot as well. But you didn't hear it from me, but it goes a little deeper than just a map. The following clip was also taken from that Unsealed Conspiracy Files episode. And if even half of what they're claiming is true, that connection might be so much deeper than anyone ever suspected.
While Washington state officials may have tipped their hands, the federal government has consistently silenced any talk of Bigfoot.
So back in the 1970s, there was an airman, and this is the person on the United States Air Force, who actually got a blood sample of Bigfoot. You know what happened? MIBs, Men in Black, whoever they were, people came in, took the blood sample, told the airman to keep a big fat mouth shut. He never saw it again.
The Men in Black and Bigfoot. Now that is a combination. Now I have more on the pesky Men in Black on next week's Part 2, so be sure to tune in. And a big thanks to Mike and all of tonight's callers for sharing their experiences. I really enjoy these themed episodes, even if there are more calls than usual. And even if it is a lot more work. Both are a great problem to have. So now for you Patreon supporters, you can continue on listening to the second half of this episode right now. Everyone else will have to wait until next Thursday to hear the thrilling conclusion. But of course, there is another way. You can sign up to support us over on Patreon. Visit patreon.com and search out Monsters Among Us podcast. Join that $5 level and boom, you get instant access to the second half of this installment, plus 100 or so bonus shows and extended episodes. Visit MonstersAmongUsPodcast.com and click the Patreon tab to learn more and to take advantage of a free 7-day trial on us. Otherwise, I'll catch you all back here next week with the second half of the Season 17 premiere, the Government Workers Special. Now, Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Delaney Bowers. All media used on this program is done so under the protection of fair use. Please take the time to follow us on social media and give us a like and follow over at YouTube as well. Don't forget you can catch the show every Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern on the UnX Digital Network. Just visit unxnetwork.com. And finally, tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Co.AG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I appreciate the support. And thanks for coming back for Season 17. I can't wait to share some of these calls we've collected. Y'all keep it spooky. Have a good night.
On a summer night, Douglas Wagg Jr. lay motionless across a strip of railroad tracks before being struck by an oncoming train. I'm investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra, and my investigation into exactly how Doug died took me into the depths of a bizarre mystery.
It was really hard to understand what was fact and what wasn't.
A mystery that has led me from one suspicious death to another. Listen to Counterclock now, wherever you listen to podcasts.